All right.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 44. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 44 from the Natural Resource Funding, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act, providing for funding of large projects under that act, specifying large projects approved for funding in 2015, requiring specified conservation easements to include the state of Wyoming as a third-party beneficiary as specified, requiring certifications regarding kickbacks and gifts, providing appropriations, providing for revision of funds, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 44, Large Project Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye are Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Klim, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petrov, Schwartz. One no vote, Representative Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petrov, Chairman. Further review by your committee number 2, Appropriations, who respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Petrov?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 44 do pass. And I'll turn the explanation over to Representative Freeman.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your desk, there are two handouts. One looks like an elk herd in a snowstorm, and with the copier, it's in a really bad snowstorm, a lot worse than what we have here. And it says large projects. Hopefully you can see on that. I didn't bring mine up. And then the other one is a page that has several PowerPoint slides. What we have here is both large projects and small projects. The small projects are the ones that has the PowerPoint presentation. I'll be very honest, I cannot answer any questions about that except for the one that happened in my county. But the point that giving this to you is I want you to realize that this Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Fund sponsors and funds projects all over the state, and I think it's probably one of the most effective programs that we have in state government, to be honest. The Wyoming legislature created the Wyoming Wildlife Natural Trust in 2005. Basically, the idea is that we, the legislature, put money into this trust fund, and then we take the interest out of that trust fund every year, and we fund projects all over. We can accept donations, and we can continually try to build it up to a $200 million trust. Currently, what happens, or currently the balance is, and never trust any number I give you, is $104 million, and 103 of that came from this body, and we've had $1 million donation. The purpose is to enhance and conserve wildlife habitat and natural resources throughout the state. And any project designed to improve wildlife habitat or natural resource that values is eligible for funding. So you will see a vast majority or a vast difference of what's going on. The Wildlife Natural Resource Trust is an independent state agency governed by a 9-member citizen board appointed by the governor, and the legislative oversight is by a select committee of 6 members, 3 from the House and 3 from the Senate. So for a project to be approved, it goes through the board, and as the value of the project goes up, it also goes through a legislative committee, and then it goes through the TRW committee, and then it finally comes to you. So these are well-vetted projects. Beginning with the first allocation of the project dollars in June of 2006, the Wildlife Trust Fund has evaluated 619 applications, nearly 90 a year, and has funded 446 projects, all in 23 counties of the state. $49 million has been earned by this trust, and a total project value has been expanded of $343 million. The average return for every dollar that the state puts in from the interest that it gets is we get a $6 match. These projects go to maintain agricultural operations, conservations, businesses, job-producing enterprises, tourism industry. There have been over 80 partners that that have cooperated with the Wyoming Wildlife Natural Resource Trust. What we're bringing to you today is, I think one other thing that I would like to say is this is a very efficient state agency. It has exactly two people that work for this this agency, and the demand for their for these projects has remained constant. And there is an approximately $10 million budget each year from what we get off that. If you'd like, if you go through your bill and the large projects at the same time, we can talk about what each one of these projects does. The first one on section one, on page one of your bill, and going on to page two, and I'm going to mispronounce this, is the Bowamee Howard Ditch, Bowamee, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And basically, that is located in Carbon County. If you look on your both on your handout and in the bill, that it's $1,433,500 project. The request from us is for $400,000. If you look at your handout, it has an asterisk in the bottom and says that it's a large project. This agency is very much up front. They fund a lot of $20,000 projects, $40,000 projects, and those are all small and those are done by the board. But whenever a project reaches the threshold of $200 million, it is brought to the select committee and it is brought to you so that you understand what's going on. Basically, what is happening in this particular project, and I hope I get all of them straight, is we have an irrigation ditch. It's a dirt ditch. It's in sandy soils, or unstable soils is probably a better way of saying it, and it slides off, and it's high maintenance, and we lose a lot of water. What this irrigation ditch is supposed to do is to irrigate areas for both wildlife and livestock, is my understanding. What this project will do is to put a pipeline in to where that it will remain stable. We won't have the loss of the water. And finally, what will happen is we will get enough water to those high pastures to where that we can have the benefits of that water right. We want to protect that water right, and it will maintain or restore over 900 acres in the middle of a large area. The second one is the neonatal mule deer area. In southwest Wyoming, we have one of the most premier mule deer herds on the continent. And we have lost about one-third of that. What this project does, and normally the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust doesn't fund a lot of research, but they're doing research in this case, and they're doing some extraordinary research. They're putting these collars on, and they know where the deer are going. They know where what they're eating. They know what they're eating at what time of the year. They also capture these deer, and they do basically a physical on them. And we're trying to determine whether or not that that we can understand why this herd is in decline. This is a large project. It's primarily being done in Sublette County. The request is for $131,000. And the total cost is $489,000. And you can see, I'm very bad at math, but that's about a 4-to-1 return. In my neck of the woods, this is very important. Hopefully we'll have a better idea of fawn survival, and we'll have a source of mortality, the diet of these deer, predation, habitat conditions, and we'll also kind of look at the genetics of what's going on. And if you look on the second page of this in the handout, you'll see there is a 2.74 match. The next one is the Bolton Creek 3, with 3 at the end of it. You've missed Rocky 1 and Rocky 2, and so you're into the sequence at Rocky 3 or Bolton Creek 3. This is a unique project to me, and what is happening is they're trying to stabilize the soils in this area, and a large portion of this project is using wildlife to preserve wildlife. This area was heavily damaged, and basically what happens is they're bringing back the beaver into this area to where that they can dam and that they can restore the habitat in that particular area. It is my understanding that the large city with the one on your license plate, but not necessarily one in your heart, takes all their fallen trees and they bring them out here for the beaver to use. And basically what they're doing is they're creating their magic, their engineering. And several years ago when Bolton Creek was first started, they could not deliver the materials because they couldn't drive to where the materials had to be located. And now what is happening is there are several places to where that they can bring the material and allow the beaver to continue to do their magic. The variety of wildlife that this helps is the fisheries, the mule deer, antelope, beaver, sage grouse, and migrant songbirds. And it has the natural resource of the project is erosion control, natural restoration, and a high level of community support. And hopefully I didn't get this out of context, but this creek goes into the Platte River, which is a blue ribbon fishery. And one of the problems to maintain a blue ribbon trout stream is to make sure that you don't have a lot of sediment. If you can create a catch, a natural catch for this sediment, then you can maintain what you have before. The next project, which is on page 7 in your bill, and the other ones are not listed, is the Little Snake Fisheries. It's located in Carbon County. Its total cost is $1,879,000. The request is $611,000. And if you look at this, you can see that it is also listed as a large project. The Natural Resource Trust has been in this area for a long time. They are working with irrigators, conservation districts, farmers. And what they're doing is they're basically re-engineering the irrigation and setting up the resources to where that they do some flood control. So we have flood control. We have improved irrigations. We complete the ecosystem. And the fisheries are the main benefit of that. And also you have some endangered species, endangered species issues, flood prevention, and it just continually builds on community successes. Again, what you have is you don't have one state agency that is doing this. What is happening is this state agency is helping the local people. It's a reimbursement. So what happens is when we get into these programs, our people go on the ground, they do site visits, they determine whether or not that they think that it's a worthy project, and then they approve it. The local people go out and do their thing, and then they come back to us for reimbursement. Anyway, I'm done with the Little Lake Fisheries portion, and I believe this is the last one, and it is on page 9. It's Little Laramie Conservation Easement. And basically what happens is conservation easements are critical places to where that it provides corridors for wildlife. And it also keeps agricultural going. If you look at the picture on the second to the last page, you can see what it's set to preserve. I've been here for 4 years, and I've been through all the arguments on conservation easements. We've promised, or the Natural Resource Trust has promised that easements are going to go out of the way. We took advantage of federal monies to do the match. Those federal monies have disappeared. The private sector, several wildlife and local areas are dealing with conservation easements. So that we've only brought one this time. And I anticipate that we won't have a great expansion from one or two from there. But this project also, as I said before, is a major migration corridor. It's highly vulnerable landscape. It is near a populated area. And if the easement isn't there, the wildlife corridor will be threatened. It has high wildlife values for elk, mule deer, antelope, moose. And it has a major influence to songbirds. When they went out to visit this site, they saw birds that they thought were no longer coming to Wyoming, migratory birds, and they were very much excited about it when they made their presentation. If you look at the fiscal note, basically what we're doing is, and this is not money out of the general fund or any coffee cans that we have as a legislature. What this money comes from is the Wildlife Natural Resource Income Account. And basically they can't spend what they don't have. And it's my opinion, for what it's worth, is that they work very hard to bring the value to their to the money that they have, and the goodwill that they create among other community or within the communities is very very important. One of the major projects, probably about 4 years ago, came to my community where it restored a wetland This wetland was on the west side of town. Oftentimes in July, when this wetland dried out, we had Christmas in July. What would happen is all the salt would come to the top and the wind would come through, and literally it looked like a snowstorm. By doing this, what has happened is that we have mitigated the wetland to where that it flows through, the salt does not rise, and slowly but surely we're getting more and more wildlife coming to this. With that, my presentation is over, and I'm available to questions, as long as they're not too deep.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the question that you may have covered, and I just missed it. But it talks about the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee. Would you tell us again about how that committee is made up and who's on it, if you could?
Representative Freeman.
Thank you. The committee is made up of 9 different individuals. They are appointed by the board, by the governor, and they serve 6-year terms. It's my belief that they are from all around the state. This is a highly dedicated group. What they do is, as I said before, they go, at least 2 of them, and oftentimes 3 and 4 of them, go to the site, boots on the ground, to see what's going on. They work extremely well with our community partners, and I've heard nothing but good things said by the director of the agency and others, the community.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question on these is, I'd like to get a better understanding of the difference between the cost of the project and the request and the amount that's contemplated in this bill. For example, who's paying the other part? I don't know if you have that stuff off the top of your head or not, but I guess the one thing I'm really concerned about or interested in knowing is if there's any other state money. You know, for example, a irrigation project could easily be funded out of the wildlife or the Water Development Commission, and I would like to know if there's any of this doubling up of state money from one of our pots to another pot. And I guess the other question I have is when we're putting in, like I'm looking at one here, it's $400,000. I'm assuming it's a private benefit accruing to somebody, like a landowner or something, and there's a public benefit. And I'd like to know a little bit about how your committee goes about evaluating the relative ratio of public benefit to private benefit in these projects in general.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's safe to say that every project's different. And one of the big groups that does work there, the 2 that I think of is the Wyoming Game and Fish Department and the local soil conservation districts. And basically what happens is they pool their money for a bigger bang for the buck, so to speak. But in our community, the other people that joined with this effort was the local Trout Unlimited, the Ducks Unlimited. You see that several of the projects are done by, is it okay for me to use these nonprofits?
The chair is in doubt.
So until I'm tackled at the podium, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the Mule Deer Foundation, in our community we had a local nonprofit that got involved, cities got involved, I think last year there was a very large project in the city in the center of the state, and you can put the one on the license plates and stuff like that. But it totally stabilized the bank all the way through that town. And it's my understanding that their nonprofits in their cities were the people that were helping with that project. So to answer your question, I'm saying I don't know, but that is how they work. What they're trying to do over and over again is leveraging what money they have, what local resources are, nonprofits, and yes, there is private and public benefits to these projects, and based on the evaluation of the projects, they'll make a determination if it's in the best interest of the state of Wyoming to go forward.
Vice Chairman Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one comment and a couple of questions, if I may. It really is encouraging in some of these pictures. I see that we have a place there for some elk to rest, and I'm not so sure that I'm not seeing some sleeping elk there. And I know that that's been a concern in for this body in the past, and I'm comforted to see that that's there. I do have a question on the Bolton Creek 3 question. And it appears there that the cost of that is $429,000. Is that over the three phases of that project, or is that just for this phase? And in either scenario, on the other two phases, did we have some other state funds involved in those two phases as well?
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Chairman, and I may be lying to you now, but it's not on purpose. It's my understanding that the total cost was $429. The request of all of the projects is from this trust is $86,500. This is the third project from that, and what I remember of the presentation, this is going to be the last request that will probably come to the trust, Metro Rockfall Trust. But I think the other thing that is important to mention, and I've been told by several people for other projects, the wetland that went through or was connected to our community, there is projects that are going on continuously there, but they don't come back to the trust. They have local resources to where that they can do small additions to the big project that we've gotten started.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like some more explanation on page 12, section 3, on the kickbacks and the gratuities and all that. What happens if there are some of this going on? And it doesn't define how small that could be, you know, so I think that section probably needs a little bit of work.
Representative Freeman.
Excuse me, I didn't hear the page. 12, thank you. The way that I read that is that they're enforcing state law, accepting kickbacks and gifts and commissions and that kind of stuff to do a public project, as far as I know, has always been illegal. And I think they're just stating that in the law. I don't know if it's strong enough, but I assume there would be.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 3 has been in there before. I think all of you can remember that we see this bill every year on these large projects, if there are large projects, one more than $200,000. So we see this. This is standard language that just requires them to certify that people getting some reimbursement for these projects have met certain requirements, and it's not in the form of, you know, they aren't getting a kickback, they aren't getting a gratuity, or that sort of thing. So that's the reason for it. It's pretty much standard language on these projects. And that the other thing is, I think to maybe clarify a question previously asked, these projects are paid for by the sponsors before they come back to the trust. and ask for any money for the project. So the project is completed at this point in time, and this is a request for a reimbursement, which they don't always get. It depends on the project and the quality and a whole bunch of variables.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Further on the subject of public benefit, in any of these projects, especially in the conservation easement, can we be assured that there's no public access loss, any public access or enjoyment that is there now is going to remain? Thank you.
Representative Freeman. Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to conservation easements, what we're buying is one stick in the bundle. And the whole bundle of sticks includes development, public access, anything the imagination can dream up. And we buy one stick in the bundle, which is the development rights. And we say that the land's going to be preserved. We own the development rights. They won't be, so the owner will never let them go. And so that prohibits any subdivision or development of the land. And then there's some other stuff in there that speaks to habitat. And it's really about habitat. It doesn't affect public access one way or the other. The owner retains that stick in the bundle. And in years past, there have been people who contended, well, we ought to require public access. Well, I guess we could, but that's another stick in the bundle. It's another check. We don't really want to buy public access necessarily, because what we're really after is habitat. And we're trying to buy the stick in the bundle that will preserve habitat for wildlife. And so if the owner of the property that's subject to a conservation easement wishes to permit public access, he can. And conversely, if he doesn't want to grant public access, he doesn't have to. We could buy that other stick in the bundle. It would probably stifle a lot of these deals and cost us a lot more money. And what would we have when we got done? We'd have habitat that was preserved, but with public access, not necessarily, in all instances anyway, what we would want anyway. So you just have to separate those two things out. I think that's the answer to the question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I stand in strong support of this bill. You know, this the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Fund and the projects that are brought forth out of there that you see today are well vetted by a gubernatorial appointed board that goes over and over these projects, fine tunes them, checks them, makes sure they're right on the ground. They do a really good job, and then you have a select committee that oversees that. You know, as we go forward, and I know I've said this to this body before, but as we go forward with sensitive species and endangered species and the ability for basically the feds to take many of our rights away, you know, the projects like these support that wildlife to keep them off those lists and to show that Wyoming is doing good work. This is a really good program, and these are good projects. And just to give you some background on me, you know, and the old members have heard this story, but I did do a project, a conservation easement project, and it did have partial funding. That's the other thing I want to talk about funding, is the Natural Resource Trust Fund in all of these only provides a portion. They're usually leveraged two or three or four times more from other funding sources. And so my family and another neighbor had a project where we did a conservation easement, and part of that conservation easement did include a public access piece. And I know anymore when Game and Fish and the Natural Resource Trust Fund look at projects, they look for public access. That is a priority. So I would urge you to support this bill.
Representative Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of clarification. I'm glad the good speaker brought up sticks. On page 6, line 10, I'd just like to ask if we're going to ship sticks in for the beaver and other aquatic species.
Representative Freeman.
I don't have a blanket answer for that. But in the city of Casper, they did bring that. They had those big storms where they had all those trees that were blown down. And basically they picked all that up, and instead of filling up their landfill, they brought them to Bolton Creek, and our engineers took care of them. If I could kind of address a little bit more about what the good member of the Appropriations Committee said is it is a reimbursement. And people usually are in charge of the project themselves. When I was the chairman of a nonprofit corporations, the city that I lived in was just absolutely ecstatic that we as a nonprofit corporation that would manage the project, because we could accept donated labor a lot better than they could, and we could work with different companies to where that we didn't require, I would say, overlapping insurance. I can guarantee you the city's attorney was looking over my shoulder, and he accused me of breaking the Constitution at least once every 6 months. But his partner was a supporter, and they talk legalese, and he would come back and say, "You're doing okay." So hopefully that answers another question.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a graph that the Wildlife Trust Fund folks put out, and it shows the amount of money, who's given, and I think we could get that maybe for tomorrow. That would be good. Just on all these projects, because they're pretty transparent, but that would be good to know, and I think we can come up with that. I'm talking about the conservation, Little Laramie conservation easement, and as the good speaker said, there's a lot of sticks in the bundle, but as we're putting these sticks in the bundle, for those that aren't aware with conservation easements, what we're doing is we are tying up that owner's land with his permission for perpetuity. And for the amount of money that we put in, the state puts in, and there's a graph that shows that, and I wouldn't mind having the graph, especially for this conservation easement, that shows who's putting it in, the state money, the entity money, the sponsoring money, and the federal money that's in there. And the conditions are set, and one of the former speakers mentioned, if we're putting state money into these, should we not have some state interest in it besides what the speaker mentioned, the conservation of the land, keeping it like it is, whatever the owners decide they want to do. So I would like to have somebody get, and I think the folks who have this can get this very easily, the amount of acres, the amount of state money, the amount of sponsoring money, the amount of federal money, and I think that'll help us understand this a little more. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to remind the body that these conservation easements are one of our best legs up we have on the sage-grouse protection portion that Wyoming has. We have all this land that's set aside. The sage-grouse are protected within it fairly well. And therefore, when the EPA starts, I'm sorry, that government agency that looks after that kind of stuff starts looking at that, that's one of the things they look at, is that Wyoming has set aside all this land that's protected more or less. And therefore, when they looked at our neighbors to the north, they said, well, we're not going to take your plan, because Montana took the plan and tried to run with it. And that particular government group said, no, you can't use the plan that we are using, because you don't have any land set aside, and it's not a place for these birds to be able to grow and develop.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look on page 10 and 11, you can see that the project for the easement is $1,653,000. Of that is $340,000. I will get you that graph, request that graph for you. The other thing is in my notes, is that the conservation easement is approximately 850 acres. And if I remember right, and if the speaker will give me a heads up or not, this is, I think, the third conservation easement in that area. So it completes the corridor what is needed by wildlife.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 44 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 44 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Do we have a privilege of the floor? All right. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 52. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 52 from Corporations, an act relating to elections, authorizing the use of electronic poll books, authorizing the use of vote centers, establishing a procedure for changing polling locations, providing definitions, making conforming amendments, repealing certification of poll books by election judges, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom have referred Senate File 52 engrossed, Elections, Vote Centers, and Electronic Poll Books, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that a do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye: Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Paxton, and Dan Swanenser. One no vote, Representative Lindholm, signed by Dan Swanenser, Chairman, and further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that a do pass. Those who voted aye: Representatives Burkhardt, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson. Signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Swanenser, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 52 do pass. There is one standing committee amendment that I would move at this time and ask you to vote in favor. This bill actually is an old friend of this body. It wasn't necessarily friendly to the other body in previous years, but it seems to have made amends over there and made it to our House. And for some reason, in the interim, although it had been a bill before us many times with an appropriation, in the interim committee bill, we didn't have an appropriation. So after it passed, actually the entire process over in the other chamber, the people from downstairs and the County Clerks Association all came and said, we have to go into the WireReg system, and it's going to cost some money with the vendors and the contractors to go make these changes to allow for electronic poll books. And so we had a very large meeting, and it was agreed that we would amend the bill on this side to include an appropriation, which we did, which is a standing committee amendment, and then we re-referred the bill, and I guess you heard the vote on that. So if there's no questions on the specific standing committee amendment, which is the appropriation of $58,000 to make the system work, $64,000. Thank you. $64,000 amendment. I'd be happy to answer questions, but would call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
Further discussion? You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Yes. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I would turn over management of the bill to the good minority caucus chairman.
Minority Caucus Chairman Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the 63rd, I bring you Senate File 52, engrossed. Electronic centers, vote centers, and electronic poll books. The bill is 21 pages long, and I'm not going to go through all 21 pages because we'll just go through the highlights that's pertinent to the discussion. So if we look on page 1, I will go over that first section, an act relating to an authorizing the use of electronic poll books, authorizing the use of vote centers, establishing a procedure for changing polling locations, providing definitions, and making conforming amendments, repealing certification of poll books by election judges. That is the essence of the bill, and it's very important to understand that as we go through it. I'm going to skip over Section 1 because that references, we could spend the rest of the day going through each one of those citations in an existing statute that we are either changing or amending or creating. So we'll skip down to Section 102, 22.1.102, Section A, where we start to create definitions. And under this, the important part is to remember, as we define it, definitions contained in this chapter apply to words and phrases used in the election code and govern construction of those words and phrases unless they are specifically modified by the context in which they appear. This is very important because we are modifying election code. That is the process, how they run the election, how they basically take the votes and tabulate those votes. So down in Section Romanet XXII, we define a poll book, and that can be a book or hardware, software, or any combination thereof referred to as an electronic poll book. It was brought to our attention that there still are some areas of the state where they do tabulate votes just a little bit more automated than a scratch pad and an abacus, so we have to keep the paper version available to us for those counties who can't or aren't up to speed with the electronic version yet. So if we keep going on through the definitions, I think these are all self-explanatory. We talk about a precinct. We talk about a polling place. A new definition that needs just a little bit touching on is a vote center, and that means a polling place at which any registered elector in the political subdivision holding an election may vote, regardless of the precinct in which he resides, connected through a secure internet connection to provide voting information and to retrieve voting information from the electronic poll book maintained by the county clerk. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the crux. This is the centerpiece, the fulcrum of the bill. The whole thing we're doing here is try to facilitate the ease of voting in the county or the locale, the precinct, where you are registered to vote. The example would be here. Let's say if you lived in that little tiny town where the sun dances on the mountaintops and you worked in that big town where the camels and the coal fields are. You could actually vote and have your vote recorded in that town where the camels and the coal fields are without having to race all the way to your home precinct by the time the polls closed at the end of the day using electronic poll book. What the electronic poll book does is it records you going into the particular precinct, records you going in to cast your vote, and then updates a centralized database, therefore prohibiting you from having to do it, from wanting to employ any mischief like driving someplace else or showing up in another polling place and attempting to vote multiple times. So it is recorded, it is secured, and it is updated fairly instantaneously using that computerized version of the poll book. So this is the heart of the bill. If we skip down to Romanet, I believe that that's XLX overvote. That just means that in the event that a vote placed on a ballot and question exceeds the allowable votes for that ballot question, it will be not allowed. The same thing as an undervote. Those will be evaluated by the county clerks when they're doing the process and the poll judges in the process of conducting the election. So we skip over to 22.2.104. That just talks about the election dates. That updates a little bit on the election dates, and I believe that that's fairly boilerplate and understandable for us all to go on. We'll skip down to section 22.3.111, preparation and contents of the poll books. This is new language that we should be aware of. The county clerk shall prepare the necessary poll books for statewide and political subdivision elections held on the same date. The poll books shall contain lists, and the rest of that shall contain those lists. The rest of that paragraph is stricken. That's important to know because we're all using a unified database here, and so this information is updated, again, for the security and the integrity of the election, so that those individuals, you may go vote, and you may only go vote once, and then it's recorded that way. So poll book distribution and entering information. Before the polls open, the county clerk shall distribute the poll books to the judges of the election in the respective polling places. There we struck the word precincts. Judges of elections shall enter the poll books information as required by law. Another definition, disposition of poll books after the polls close. That just updates us how we are going to dispose of the poll books, actually take them back to the county clerks so they can make those available for the canvassing and the certification of the election. And we skip down to 22.6.104, sample ballots. That hasn't changed much. The only thing we did was strike precinct and enter the term polling place, because now, again, using an electronic poll book, you are not tied down to a precinct to vote, but you may vote in a polling place that is within your area where that poll book is, where you are registered. So if we go down to section 2206, we're addressing the replacement of lost ballots. That's pretty much the same. The only thing we did was strike the word precinct in there. A rotation of candidates, names, equal lines, voting machines. That has not changed either. We're only updating language there on line 22 as to replace precinct with polling place. So we have a lot of those changes that go through. I'm going to start going a little bit faster. 22.8.106 has another update, precinct polling place again. Page 8, the next section, 22.8.108, the same change. Skipping over to page 9, the same change, precinct, again, polling place. Skipping through 22.9.115, like change as we are talking about. Keep going through there, 22.10.111, same change. 22.11.102, precinct's polling place. You see what we're doing here. Skip over to page 11 now, same change. Section I, Romanet double I, same change, and Section C. Going to Section 22.12.101, designation polling place, external location, change in location. Section A, polling places shall be designated by the county clerk. This is all the same language that was there before. But if we go over to page 12, Section B, we have new language. Polling place designated pursuant to subsection A of this section as used in the 2014 general election shall not be changed unless a notice describing the proposed change is posted in the county's official website in the manner provided in Wyoming Statute 183516, Section F. That's a very important note. Basically, we can't make these changes without posting them to the general public so they are made aware of what we are doing and what the county clerks are doing with the new polling places in the poll book. Notice shall include date, place, and of the county commissioner's meeting where the proposed changes will be discussed. This is basically your notice of the public meeting to advise you that we will be using the electronic poll book or making subsequent changes to the way that you are allowed to vote. They're going to be posted in your local newspaper along with the way we do address every public meeting, etc. like that. 2212-107 addresses the materials for the judges. That's fairly straightforward with the change of the polling place. 2212-110 is the same. 2213-118, judges' work schedule. That just defines, changes the word premise to place on the election of the polls. These are basically one-word changes that have to do with the physical location. We skip over to page 14, section 2214-102. We go down halfway through, we have where we have stricken the language on line 8. Poll books within the precinct shall first be made to agree before any votes are counted when the poll books agree. That is stricken language. That's the only change there. The rest of it has to do with that change that we've been talking about, polling places versus precinct again. So a lot of that is boilerplate. We have 2214-111 on page 15. Is how we're going to return the records to the clerk. Going over to page 16, Romanet I-1, and we have sealed copy of the electronic voting system printer pack. These are things that will be given to the judges. This is pretty self-explanatory in that section also. 2215-109, the poll watcher certification and authority and removal. That's pretty much the same as it was before. The only thing we're doing is updating the language to say polling place rather than precinct. We go down to 2216-102, abstract vote returns not filed. The new language there is abstract shall contain the items required. The Wyoming statute 2216-103, C, Romanet, VII. So we go down to the bottom, page 22, section 2216-103, county canvass procedures. This is where it gets exciting, so hold on. Romanet 8, ensure abstracts contain the following information. Subsection A, primary elections, the total ballots cast by party, including unaffiliated votes. And then there's Section B. All of this stuff is fairly self-explanatory as to what we're doing. We're just updating some language here in this section. Section E on page 19, the same. We're just updating and clarifying language and what needs to be done during the canvass. Section F, the official designation number of each ballot, proposed the number of votes, and against in figures. And Section G, the number of provisional ballots cast. Section 2221-108, who is entitled to vote? Another very exciting section of this bill that you should pay very close attention to. The change there is on line 3, page 20, where we changed into 4. Now, we'll go down to Section C. The change there is we have stricken the language on line 11 in each precinct so that line reads, three judges shall be appointed for the polling place in such special elections, and additional judges may be appointed and deemed if necessary by the county clerk. 2222-102, date of the election trustee terms, interim vacancies. That is pretty much intact. The only thing we're doing is the exciting change of online 20, changing the word into 4. And going over to page 21. Run for 4 years beginning at 12 noon, that is 12 noon Mountain Time, I believe. It doesn't say which time zone. But on the first day of December following the election, conduct who may vote. Section A underneath that is as provided in Wyoming Statute 2223-202. Municipal and primary general elections are held at the same time in the same manner in the same polling places and are conducted by the same strike that word precinct, insert election officials using the same polling list as statewide primary and general elections. 2223-804 is the ballots. That's basically a one-word change down there, striking precinct, going to polling. Polling list 22-23-805. The poll list for the special election shall be obtained by the municipal clerk from the county clerk and, hold on, shall be paid for by the municipality. The municipal clerk shall furnish copies the precinct poll list to the election judge. Copy of the precinct registry shall be posted at each precinct. Strike the word precinct, insert polling place during the special election. Section 2, here we go. This is important. Wyoming Statute 22-14-106 is repealed. Section 3, this is effective July 1st, 2015. That is the bill. Let me briefly go over some of the digest with you. This was started in the Senate. The Senate came in and did a standing committee amendment where they changed on page 3, line 13 of the original bill. They changed computerized registration book to electronic poll book. They did a couple other word changes that are not very important unless you like understanding either adopted or discussed or rejected and only. Passed out of the Senate with 25 ayes, 4 nays, 1 excused. It came over to our corporations committee where we took a look at it. It passed out of that committee 8-1, and now it is in front of you. With that, I do stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members in the body, I want to turn you to page 4, section 22-2104, because I do believe this is a policy shift. And probably because I'm from a rural area and a rural county, I just think people ought to know what they're voting for. And so in this section, if you look at subsection B, it says that primary election shall be held at the regular polling places. And then before, the statute said in each precinct. And now it says for each precinct. And the way I read that, unless somebody else can tell me I'm wrong, is that we could consolidate, potentially a county could consolidate all its voting to one spot and eliminate all of those other voting precincts. And you get into some of these rural areas and the weather's bad, and you know, it's kind of important. Those people like to have those polling places spread out through those counties and through those areas. So I'm a little concerned by doing this. First of all, we didn't really talk about this section. I'm a little concerned about what may happen in really rural counties and whether we'll lose that voting, basically a voting right in your precinct. So I would just like that addressed. Thanks.
Minority Caucus Chairman Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the question. Addressing that, it is going to be up to the county clerk's purview to decide how many locations that they have available to vote. Now, they can choose to roll out as many of these as they want, but keep in mind that there's a cost attached to every place that you define as a polling location. So the idea here is to cut costs and improve efficiency. So if you're spending a lot of money on an election inside a county, your county clerk is going to try to look for that little school or that little barn or pole barn out in the middle of nowhere where only 8 people sometimes show up to vote. And yeah, you may lose that that location because it costs a lot of money to staff that with people and get those election results in. So they may consolidate that to someplace else. Now, I doubt very seriously, and speaking just hypothetically, that your county clerk would move that to a location that is, let's say, to the county seat or someplace 50 miles away, because that doesn't seem tenable for the election. But this does give them the ability to consolidate polling locations that are expensive that they're not getting full use out of.
I know that was even too. Chairman Zwanitz or Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you believe me if I said this is a simple little bill? Okay, so back to the 30,000-foot level. you all remember 20 years ago, you know, the quaint way we went and voted at the local elementary school. Well, times are changing. Primarily after 9/11, we just don't go into schools anymore, right? Schools don't want people they don't know coming in to vote. And so we're losing more and more of our historic polling places. And so what you've seen happen, especially in larger counties, including mine and some of the ones in the middle of the state, is about 5-6 years ago, they started condensing polling places. So now you actually have 3 or 4 or 5 precincts all vote at the same location, but you walk into a line when you get in there. And at my local location, we have 4 different precincts who vote, but you just go vote in your precinct. So what this does, and with the advent of internet technology, is we no longer, you no longer have to have a system where, you know, a precinct is just a construct, really, of your county clerk. There's no official designation of what a precinct has to be. It just kind of is made in the old days to ensure that people used to go vote locally with a local election judge. So what you can do now, and what this bill allows and does not mandate, so this is totally up to your county clerk, and that's what I want to make sure you know. Your county clerk can do it whichever way they want, but if they want an electronic poll book, they can say you can vote at any precinct in town or whichever of their major poll centers they would like, however the county clerk wants to, that you can vote. So it's just like in Laramie County, we go down to the county courthouse. If you want to vote early, you can go vote early, and it affects whichever precinct in town you're in. This would allow the same type of mechanism that there is a snowstorm. You can't make it. You know, you drive into town and work there for the day, but your polling location is, you know, 30 minutes out back to near where you live. If you can't make it and your county clerk has a system where you can have an electronic poll center, you can go vote there. No one's disenfranchised. So what the impetus is of this really is to make sure we don't have people disenfranchised who can't make it to certain places on election days in far out rural areas. And so, again, this is, it's actually a really intriguing crafted bill we've done some work on now for 3 years. It allows for both systems to happen based on how your county clerk wants to run it. If you like the system where you don't have any of this electronic and stuff, that your county's just not ready for that, you don't have to have it. And we would hope that your locally elected county clerk would understand that. If you're in a county like mine, where you have 64 different precincts, and it's sometimes just crazy trying to find 64 different locations in my county especially, this allows for precinct locations to be in the same location and for you to go and vote. So I hope that answers some of the questions. Yes, it is a shift in historic policy, but it's not, I would say, a monumental or seismic shift. This is a new allowance. And so if you like it the old way and your county clerk likes it the old way, nothing really changes. But if you're a county where it's getting increasingly difficult to manage 64 precincts in Laramie County, this really helps your county clerk out a whole heck of a lot. And that's where the bill came from, really, is from the County Clerk's Association. And I'd be happy to answer any questions along with the good floor manager.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions to make sure I understand this correctly. And I think I do on this first one, but I want to confirm. If the county clerk chose to allow it, it would allow anybody within the county to vote at any place within the county, but you would not be able to vote in a different county. I'm getting nods, so I'm assuming that's correct. So, and then my other question is, I know that, in my county, we have, I would estimate, at least 20 different ballots from one precinct to another. So if they allowed voting at any precinct, would each voting place have all 20 different ballots to make sure that the people got the correct ballot? Is that how that works, or am I missing something here?
Chairman Zornitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, that is generally correct. It's within the county, but it is still how your county clerk sets it up. But we do have the technology, the secure technology, that you could go to any location your county clerk chose. So I don't want you to think in all cases you could go to anywhere in the county and it would work. And in some cases that might happen, but not in all. But it's still based on your county clerk and the technology they want to employ. And there is a little bit of cost for those counties who want to go this route based on the county. But that would generally allow for, yes, you to be able to go through the electronic poll book wherever you are. And, you know, it's the same thing when we get our list of people, all the voters in the county, same kind of technology. So, yes, your vote, and then they can track that you've already voted, so it would not allow you to vote both anywhere else in your county or anywhere else in the state, because our systems now, they all interrelate. And so with technology and with the opposite side of more security and less places we have that your county clerk can contract with to allow for a vote center. This should be a win-win for those counties who are really experiencing some difficulty over the last couple of election cycles.
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions. We've been talking about managing precincts and affecting precincts, and earlier we had a bill earlier in the year to eliminate our precinct committee men and women, and I just wanted to make sure that this bill wasn't leading in any way to that, because that's a really important position within the counties.
Madam Majority Floor Leader Berger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No. And Mr. Chairman, just to follow up with the current chairman of corporations, is that the work that we've been doing with the Clerks Association and with the Secretary of State's office on our poll books and our precincts and the areas is truly modernization, but it's also kind of in increments of how your county and your precincts and your people can accommodate to the transition. So we're just truly modernizing to their capabilities so that it would be allowed at the time that they're ready to do it. We have had over the last 2 years this topic in our committee, and this particular interim had parts of 3 days where we had presentations and public participation on developing this particular piece of legislation. So in my view, it's been well vetted and worked out through all the people that are in particular involved in how this should work. So if you have more questions, I would be glad to help you with them.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and against this bill, I was the lone vote against in committee, specifically for one situation, and I kind of want to paint that picture for you. If you can imagine that this was adopted in a small county, there are precincts in these small counties without any electricity, any phone line, nothing going to them. I mean, they're literally in old community centers, and it's not a very dense population. You guys probably understand that. So I guess where I have a problem with where something in this bill could happen is somebody could vote at their precinct place, say it's a far-off distance one, and they're not going to report back. That report back isn't going to happen under this. So they technically could go to one of these polling places and vote again before that information is updated at the end of the night. And now you've got a whole different set of numbers, and the whole thing can get goofed up. And that's my big concern with this bill. Thank you.
Minority Caucus Chairman Byrd.
Thank you. Just a little bit of clarification on my colleague's comments. This is optional. The county clerks can adopt whatever works best in their county. This is by no ways an edict from us here in the state capitol that everybody goes to this. So if paper and pencil works best for you in the hinterland where you collect votes, then that's up to you. We got to keep in mind that every one of these county clerks have to get elected, so they're not going to implement anything that makes an election just go crazy. That would be election suicide for anybody to undertake that. So they're going to look for reasonable expectations and outcomes in anything that they employ relative to an election cycle. So to prohibit duplication of votes or people going out and voting right now, they could actually do that with more ease considering the current system that we have that is not connected, is where you could run across town in this locale. You could run across town in three different precincts and have voted three times in a matter of 20 minutes if there's no line. So this does employ safeguards when it's rolled out and properly in place. It dovetails in with the existing system. So if somebody did vote at an electronic polling location and did go back to their home precinct and vote inside using the old methodology, it would show up at the end of the night when the election judges are reconciling the votes. So these holes are plugged. I think there's sufficient security on this. And at this particular point, I would rest and ask for an aye vote. Call for the question.
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 52 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 52 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 4. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 4 from Agriculture, an act relating to agriculture, creating the Dry Bean Commission, providing powers and duties, creating the Dry Bean Commission account, requiring assessments from dry bean growers and handlers as provided, providing definitions, providing rulemaking authority, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 4, engrossed dry bean research, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Yeagy, Larson, Lindholm, and McKim, signed by Representative McKim, Chairman, and further reviewed by your committee number 2, Appropriations, who respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Stebson, and Nicholas, and signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McKim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 4, Dry Bean Research, do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Number 1 to this bill, and I will explain that amendment and ask for your aye vote when I'm done.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow legislators, the amendment, if you'll look at it, is simple addition on page 6, line 5, and all it does is take a reporting requirement, and as it says, it has to be done annually, so the word on line 5, after report, annually is inserted into that line to the governor, and then after the governor, we add the language and the Joint Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources Interim Committee. And with that, Mr. Chairman, if there's no questions on the amendment, I will ask for the question.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Larson.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll go ahead and explain the bill. This bill came about in the past year, I believe, during discussions at the Wyoming seed certification meetings, and it was brought forward by bean growers, which are bean seed growers mainly, due to the fact they would like to get some research done in the state that was actually at our experiment stations. So they could get, hopefully they could get shorter growing varieties and maybe some different varieties that some different chemicals that could be used on the beans than the ones we've had for 20 years or more. And also maybe get a bean that stands up higher so you don't have to cut it off and you could combine it without cutting it and putting it in the dirt. But that's the main reasons, is the hope that they get some money so they could do some research. I'll go ahead and explain the bill. In Section 1, we create the statutes for this commission, 1149, 101 through 108. On page 2, we go to definitions. It defines what a commission is, what the department is, what the director is. It gets down to a description of a dry edible bean, and that includes all market classes and varieties of dry edible beans produced in Wyoming, including beans intended for use as seed. Dry edible beans include pintos and navies and black beans and other special varieties. These are the beans you buy dry at the grocery store and you have to soak so you can eat them. So that's what we're trying to grow. A grower means any person engaged in growing and causing to be grown dry edible beans on 1 acre or more in Wyoming. Grower may include an owner and tenant jointly or at partnership, association, corporation, and the such. And then on page 3, we get to handler. Handler means any person, no matter where the person is located, who is engaged in the operation of buying, selling, shipping, or distributing dry beans grown in Wyoming, which he has purchased or acquired from a grower, or which he is shipping on behalf of a grower. And then we go to Statute 1149-102, which tells how a dry bean commission is established, its composition, the appointment, the term, the removal, the vacancies, and the reimbursement for expenses. Starting in A, this one tells us how the commission shall be composed of 6 members initially appointed by the governor. And that's kind of important. The first part, we want the governor to appoint these commissioners. The director shall serve as ex officio without a vote during the meetings. The appointed commission members shall consist of 4 growers residing in Wyoming, with at least 1 of the members residing in Laramie, Platte, or Goshen County, Wyoming. And the reason for that is, I'll just go ahead and explain. There's about 42,000 acres grown within the state, and 1/3 of those growers are down in the southeast part of the state, and there's more like 2/3 of the acreage is up in the northwest. And so they were hoping, with this statute, they'll guarantee that one of the growers will be down in the southeast corner, and then we'll see where the other 3 come out. Then going on, 2 members shall be handlers with dry bean processing facilities located in Wyoming. The next, in B, it describes the terms of the office for the initial appointments shall be 2 terms of 4 years and 2 terms of 2 years for the grower members, and then the initial terms of office for the handler members shall be 1 term for 4 years and 1 term for 2 years. Upon the expiration of each of these terms, the commission shall conduct by mail an election to fill the open membership. Only growers and handlers who paid dry bean assessments in the previous 2 calendar years shall be eligible to vote in and stand for the election. So this will set up where the growers and handlers can actually elect their members from then on, the commissioners. At this time, I have a committee of the whole amendment I would like to enter. You should have a copy of that. Amendment number 1. I would move that amendment, and I'll just tell you what it does. In the sentence there, in C, the governor shall declare the office of any appointed member of the commission vacant when he finds that the member, and then it goes on to describe what happens there. But since we're going to have some appointed members and some elected members, we thought we better include elected. So now, the governor shall declare the office of any appointed or elected member of the commission vacant when he finds that the member has done such and such. And is this the proper time to ask for a question?
Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we'll continue. As we were stating, the governor shall declare the office of any appointed member of the commission or elected member of the commission vacant when he finds that the member is no longer a grower or a handler, is unable to perform his duties, or has become a resident of another state. And then in D, it says members of the commission shall serve without compensation but shall receive mileage per diem as provided by law for state employees. In the next section, it tells us the powers and duties of the commission. It says the commission shall receive and disperse funds. It annually elect a chairman and a vice chairman, and no chairman shall succeed himself more than once. They shall meet not less than 2 times each year. And then it goes on in Romanette 4 on page 6, they shall keep a permanent record. We went through this one already on the Standing Committee Amendment. They'll keep a permanent record of its proceedings and report annually. In Romanette 5, it states if a commission decides it wants to do research or promotion, they must submit a budget and cash flow statement and give that to the director. And then it states in B, the commission may conduct or contract for scientific research to discover and develop improved varieties, production techniques, and in-use products. Romanette 2, they can conduct or contract for programs of consumer education and market development. Then it continues, they can disseminate information on dry bean, edible beans. They can study state and federal legislation concerning the dry edible bean industry. They can be sued as a commission. They can enter into contracts. They can appoint an advisory group interested in the welfare of the dry edible bean industry. They can make grants to research agencies. In Romanette 9, they can appoint and subordinate officers and employees of the commission. In 10, they can cooperate with any local, state, or nationwide organization or agency engaged in work related to those of the commission. They can adopt rules and regulations. Then we get to Statute 1149-104, the authority to accept grants. And in 105, they can contributions can be allowed. In Statute 1149-106, it establishes the dry bean commission account, the assessment rate, the collection and payment of assessments. In A, all monies received shall be deposited in the state treasury. The state treasurer shall deposit the monies to the credit of the dry bean commission account. In B, the assessments collected shall be deposited with the state treasurer. And then in C, the commission shall, at the end of each quarter, reimburse the department for collection and administrative costs incurred by the department in collecting the assessment under subsection B of this section. The amount reimbursed shall equal 1% of the assessments collected during the quarter and shall be deposited with the state treasurer. In Section D, the amount of the assessment collected under this section shall be as follows. For the growers, it will be 0.34% of the value of the settlement to the grower. And for the handlers, it'll be 0.17% of the value of the settlement to the grower. At this point, I might just bring up that the fiscal note shows that the anticipated revenue from this assessment is estimated to be $153,000. There's kind of an important part on page 11, Romanette 3. After July 1st of 2017, the commission by rule may change the assessment level under this section, provided that the proportionate share be two-thirds on the grower and one-third on the handler, and the total levy shall not exceed 1%. The assessment rate shall be paid by the respective grower and handler who are primarily liable. The first handler of the beans sold shall collect the required assessment from the grower and shall remit the assessment from the grower and the handler to the department, not later than the 15th day of the month immediately following the quarter in which the beans were sold or contracted. Also, the handler shall submit a list of the name and address of growers that the handler collected assessments from in the immediately preceding year. In section F, page 11, this deals with dry beans which may be mortgaged or pledged to security. In G, it talks about dry beans stored in private or public storage shall not be liable for assessment until a sale of the bean is made. In section H, this deals with beans which may be delivered by a grower to out-of-state handlers and beans which may be delivered by a grower who lives outside the state. So they're trying to get the border farmers covered there. An important part of the bill is the ability to get a refund if a farmer or a grower so requests. In Section A, on page 13, it says, any person who has paid any assessment as provided in this act is entitled to a prompt refund of the contribution from the commission upon request. No assessment paid by a handler is refundable under this section unless the grower has also claimed a refund under this section for the matching portion of the assessment. In Part B, it says, before processing any claim, the commission may require any additional information to determine the validity of the claim. On the last page, it provides a surety bond required. It states that a surety bond required to receive or disperse funds. And then in Section 2, it gives an effective date of July 1, 2015. I think you all might have got a handout. It's blue-colored. And it just gives a couple items you might want to know before we vote on it. You might answer some of your questions. The research is needed. It states that dry beans are a minor crop that have few granting opportunities. So funding for applied research that addresses current and future Wyoming production issues must be generated from other sources. A bean checkoff is a way for the industry to self-support and direct research to current needs rather than topics dictated by federal granting opportunities or attempt to gain general fund appropriations from the state. The research is needed to maintain Wyoming seed and commercial dry bean production. With the research, bean varieties may be developed which grow better in Wyoming. Existing varieties are better suited to areas. The existing varieties they have are better suited to areas with longer growing seasons. There were substantially 70% freeze damage this past fall with the very early and very cold temperatures, so the farmers really took it hurt them bad. Dry bean agronomic research regarding management practices, irrigation and harvesting techniques, and pesticide use would allow growers to adopt techniques that would speed maturity of their crops. And handlers are interested in evaluating in-use qualities. This is not being done with the varieties adapted to Wyoming growing conditions. Wyoming production and value. Dry beans are an important production opportunity for Wyoming producers, both as commercial crop and a seed crop in terms of acres and income. Like I said before, there's roughly 42,000 harvested acres in 2012 for all dry beans. Bighorn County had 12,000, Park County had about 10, Fremont County has about 3,500, and the other counties in the state were about 16,000. The value of production for dry beans was estimated to be $37.5 million in 2012. That That ranking is fourth in the state behind hay, corn, sugar beets, and it's ahead of wheat and barley and oats. There are some seed that is grown in Wyoming that it gets certified through the weed certification. There are about 8,000 acres of certified seed produced in Wyoming. Wyoming seed is considered a premium product in Minnesota, Michigan, North Dakota, and Canada, as our environment supports the production of seed free of seed-borne diseases. Most of the seed produced in the state is destined for those markets. The Wyoming Crop Improvement Association voted unanimously to pursue a dry bean checkoff at their 2014 annual meeting. The regional meeting in Powell this past December reaffirmed that vote. There is a letter of support if someone would like that. Numerous handlers have also expressed support, and there are some letters from them also. So with that, I would ask if there's any questions.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On in support of the bill, on the basic premise that this is a voluntary deal, and if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. But that research can be paramount. And I do have a question for the good presenter of the bill as to regards. He had mentioned at the very beginning of his presentation a little while ago, mentioning that we could grow a crop of beans that was perhaps tall enough to combine. And I would like to know just how tall said beans would have to be in order to combine. That would really solidify whether this deal is worth it or not for me. Thank you.
Representative Larson Dan.
Oh,
Mr.
Boy.
Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And coupled with that last question, I'd like to know if the legislature at some future time decides that we are the body that are going to decide the height of the beans, would we do that through a budget footnote? Is that how it would be?
Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to gently push back a little bit, we have a lot of bean growers in my county over by the Nebraska, by the state line. And we didn't make it to the interim meetings just because we heard it was a voluntary program. But if you read on page one, it says requiring assessments. So that's not voluntary, just like fuel tax isn't voluntary, we get a refund. So if we choose to pass this, I'm not totally against the bill. If we choose to pass this, we would like to see an opt-out provision in the beginning rather than necessarily getting a refund. We all know that we passed the beef checkoff and we had a refund program there with that, but now we took that refund provision away. So not necessarily against the bill, just want to make sure our growers have the option of getting out if they'd like to. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think over the interim I got most of the bad stuff out of this bill, but there's still some things here people need to be aware of, and it is a voluntary program for the growers, but the growers aren't the only ones being assessed, and not all handlers are in favor of this bill. And so, you know, one of the things you put on the handlers is the obligation. The first handler has the obligation to collect the assessment and turn it over. Then a grower has the right to request a refund. However, the handlers do not have a right to request a refund. So it is voluntary for growers, but it is not voluntary for that middleman. So I just want to make those comments.
Representative Larson Dan.
Yes, to try to explain that, they can get a refund, but it has to be if the grower also gets the refund. So so they can get part of it if the grower so does it.
Representative Eklund.
Yeah, on the refund, that would be written into the statute, so the only way that the change on the refund could happen would be if it comes back through the body. The commission would not be able to change statute law, I don't believe. And the height of the beans, we've got some folks experimenting with it. They don't have to be very high. If you've seen soybeans, it's kind of the same deal. They're not going to be quite that high. But they use a different type of a head, and it just cuts the risk down of growing the harvesting the beans. You don't lay them in the dirt and wait for rain to cause a lot of damage. My neck of the woods, they lost a great share of the crop 2 years ago when they laid it in the dirt and we got a bunch of rain on it. The Northwest lost most of the crop to frost because the beans didn't mature enough. These are beans that are developed elsewhere. Wyoming is using varieties that were developed 30, 40 years ago. And the new varieties are being developed in other places. I think one of the most beneficial parts of this program might be in herbicide management. If you've ever heard of a nightshade, it's a little vine that has a berry on it that's about the size of a bean, and it goes into the crop, and it's kind of similar to having rye in your wheat. If you're a wheat farmer, it's just you just don't want it around, or a disease in your cattle or something. It's kind of the same principle, but we don't have any research that's been done in Wyoming to try to combat pesticides. We're using the same procedures. There's a little research out of Nebraska, and what we would do would couple with what they've done. But for the most part, the research is all being done elsewhere. And one correction I'd kind of make is I made it to some of these meetings, and the Southeast growers that I'm familiar with are in favor of it. I went to two or three meetings. I didn't make it to the Northwest, but the crop improvement people were there, and seed beans or commercial beans, it didn't matter. They wanted some research that would improve their crop. They've had a difficult time of it because it's a very minor crop, and you don't see a lot done. But we do have a couple good research centers that would probably end up being granted money to do the research. One of them is in the southeast corner along the river that's flat down there, and then up in the Northwest. There are researchers up there that the majority probably up, well, maybe both of them, but I would urge your support of the bill. There's a refund on it, it's the cleanest way to do the refund. You know, I hate to belabor it, but years ago I had the same problem with a wheat checkoff deal assessment, and I was going to go get my refund, and the elevator man came in, and he said, "Do you know what you're doing?" And I said, "Well, I think so. I'm getting my money back. I don't want to give him a penny for my bushel of wheat." They had raised, this commission had raised 15 cents on the price of wheat when it was about a dollar. So I've never regretted putting any money into self-taxes. It's kind of the only way farmers can get much advertising or research or any of that. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill. This legislation needs to happen so we can get the research, as a previous speaker has said. And as to the middleman passing on, or a middleman charging an extra little bit to get that, he's just going to pass that on. So that amount that he's going to have to charge for his collection, he'll just pass that on to the next guy. It's a position that they're in to be able to move that around. To the height of the beans, if we legislate the height of the beans, the gentleman across the way will screw it up with a footnote.
Are we ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Beans pardon me, Chairman McKim's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it will do so with the recommendation that Bill number 4 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 4 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration?
No.
Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. Senate File 142, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 101, recommended do pass. Senate File 58, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 92, recommended do pass. Representative Stebson moved that the House rise and sit again. Senate File 44, recommended do pass. Senate File 52, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 4, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Signed by Representative Edmonds, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Edmonds. Great job. Ladies and gentlemen, and Representative Northrup, we're going to consider Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on House Bill 23. Representative Vice Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on Senate Message Number 232 to Joint Conference Committee Number 1 on House Bill 23 and ask for your favorable vote. Remember, this is the one that had the amendment put on it at the Senate level. We went over there. We knocked heads with them for a while. We told them what they did to our great chairman and got a little amendment put together. And I would just ask for you to vote aye on this. Thank you.
Discussion on the motion. Question being called. We're voting on Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on House Bill 23. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly. Dayton,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Edwards,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay, Greer,
aye.
Halverson,
no.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey excused, Hunt, Yagi,
no.
Jennings,
aye.
Kasparik, Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Larson Lloyd,
aye.
Larson Dan,
aye.
Lindholm,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
no.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton excused. Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pieperinen.
Pinnell.
Aye. Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
No.
Steinmetz? Steinmetz, I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
No.
Thank you. Stubson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters. Winters?
Aye.
Winters excused. Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Gay. Gay?
Excuse.
Gay excused. Hunt.
Excuse.
Hunt excused. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Clem? Aye to no. Blackburn? No to aye. Jennings? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 43 aye, 12 no, 5 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on House Bill 23. Committee reports. Committee announcements. Representative Zwanitzer Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Highway, Transportation, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night directly after adjournment to discuss interim topics. If you have some topics ahead of time, feel free to get them up to the Secretary. And then later next week, we'll have the joint conference. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Labor Number 10, will meet today, 10 minutes after adjournment, in Room H-17 to consider Senate File 85, Adult Foster Care Pilot Projects.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Friday morning at 9 o'clock to consider interim topics.
Chairman Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess to hear Senate File 99, Pharmacy Act Amendments, Senate File 136, Expedited EMT Licensing, and Senate File 116, Legislative Compensation, if time permits.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in Room S-15 to consider interim topics.
Chairman Madden.
Likewise, Joint Revenue Committee Number 3 will be meeting in H-11, but it'll be on Monday. So if you anybody's got any advice for us or any ideas for the summer, let us know. It's in Room H-11.
Vice Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment tonight. In Room H-10, we're going to discuss Senate File 74, Summer School Intervention Remediation, and Senate File 91, Charter School Eligibility and the Bonus Payments. Committee members, don't forget to bring your calendars and interim ideas. Thank you.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, February 26, upon noon recess in Room 204 to consider Senate File 141 and Growth, State Budget Development, and Senate File 146, Spending Policy Amendments. Also, Mr. Speaker, two announcements. Your Joint Conference Committee Number 1 on the Budget, House Bill 1, has concluded, and it'll take staff probably through Friday and the weekend to finish the language, so we'll probably have a joint conference report ready for next Monday on the budget. Probably not going to happen by Friday, so probably plan on Monday. And then I would just remind members that towards the end of the session, when these Senate file amendments get re-referred, we don't have time to send out meeting notices, and our rules, we don't have to actually announce meeting notices for re-referred bills. So if you're a co-sponsor on a re-referred bill, you know, just kind of maybe help with your senator to, because those a lot of times come pretty fast and furious. So we want to kick them back out here so they don't die in our committee waiting for an announcement. So that's it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet Friday, February 27th, upon noon recess in Room H-8 to consider interim topics, and bring your calendar.
Representative Kirkbride.
Privilege, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, please proceed.
The Thursday morning prayer breakfast will meet at the Egg and I at 6:30 tomorrow morning. The guest speaker, there's a change from what was passed out. The guest speaker will be Lynn Kirkbride.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our general file for consideration tomorrow, February 26th, is as follows. Senate File 132, 130, 47, 124, 111, 134, 133, 95, 24, 118, 88, 99, 138, 57, 56, 55, 51, 80, 126, 50, and 144. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 26, 2015.
Representative Blake.
Adjourned until 10 a.m.